Hello, we want to welcome you back to Hello Earth. Michael's with us again from the island of Maui. He's going to be talking about his trip out to a huge illuminated object in somewhere around Saturn. He said it moves around quite a bit, but last time when we seemed to just cut him off at the end of the hour, Michael, you were saying that humanity, we were brought here, and God had a lot to do with it. Could you, do you want to take it from there?
Yes, I'll take it from around there. Briefly, let me explain how it all started and why this is termed, the term God is in here. It's because I was out in my backyard, basically screaming at the top of my spirituality. I guess you might say, just not, you know, physically using my vocal cords, but just screaming, God, where are you? I want to know you. Please make yourself real. Send someone to help verify your reality. And I kept saying that for a long time. And what happened was a star became a point of focus for me, and then it began to move and get closer, and then there was definite intelligence behind that star, and I knew that I had made a contact with somebody, because there was definitely a contact to that star. The star moved closely, slowly, until it was close enough to be within 100 feet of me, and that was pretty much my backyard, and it was in the evening sky, of course, and the yard grew a beautiful blue light haze, light, and the stars, as it hovered, it formed a cross in its four rays, extended out, beautiful white, and the bottom ray touched the ground. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had a lot of missing time, because the next thing I knew, it was bright morning, and it was into the day already, and I found myself there, and there was a lot of missing time, and I felt wonderful. I felt like I wanted to go back and see the people that I met in the light, and I just couldn't believe. So here I am, going to be telling you right now from the perspective of a searching soul what had happened there, and how much it's opened up in my memory, and now that I found Riley's testimony and story, and found out that his is quite accurate, quite the same as what I had experienced. However, from my viewpoint, it was from a point of a human being searching for the reality of God, and that's pretty much why the question was, where did humanity come from? Where did all of the creatures, even life on Earth, come from? And I found out that we're not an accident, not some, you might say, result of just the right mix of circumstances, and that they started on a very simple level and worked its way up. We actually were, Earth was actually one of the built spheres of life that has been done throughout the new universe, through the Milky Way galaxy itself, plus other galaxies. And these people were explaining to me some things about that, how it's no accident, especially. It's no accident that has happened. So that question on why, I mean, were we, you know, just simply brought here as far as the human race, was it just brought here? No, it actually was developed here on Earth, but against the design that is humanoid. And it's because of one of the things that I did go through was the description that Tan and Nella, as described by Riley, is a very accurate description and very accurate drawing. And they're humanoid, definitely humanoid. And they are very wonderful beings. They're full of love, and they just are able to commune with God. And this is an important factor in my knowledge. Is here I am trying to find God, and next thing you know, I'm with them, and I'm declaring that they're not God. I say, you're not God. You can't be God, because God is much more than you. And they never said they were God, but they tried to point me to God. And during the time in which I was with the Council of Elders in the Hall of the Elders, it was a very beautiful experience there, because although I had all my preconceived notions and things like that, I really realized that they really wanted to point me in a direction, and to realize that we are only one very of millions of different worlds, just numerous worlds that have been populated by beings that are humanoid. Or and one of the other thing was that it was not always humanoid, but the characteristic was intelligent and God-seeking beings, people or beings that can and make progress toward being eternal beings, essentially, having a very, 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 very long life. Relative to time, it would be, you might as well say it's eternal. So that's what I experienced there. And is that where it was, Curtis, or were we around there?
Yes, we were talking about how humans actually got here, whether the DNA was the basis of life from here or from another planet. And it sounded to me, the way you were describing it, that the ingredients were already here, they just changed it a little bit. And when you were speaking about trying to find God, these people weren't saying they were God, but didn't they have, you were almost implying that they had a hand in creating us, or arranging us.
They, God, as the creator of the universe and of all life, they understood exactly what it was getting at. And of course, they knew that I wasn't really capable of perceiving the full picture. But what they wanted to do was to get to know me, in several different ways besides knowing my personality. They actually did some things concerning my actual health and DNA and all of that. And through that, they began to show me that there were other beings similar, and some that are not similar at all. I mean, they're coming out of the Hollow of the Elders. Let me give you a little bit of I'll wrap up in their explanation and what they did was mm-hmm. when I rode the levitators into the Hall of the Elders through an open space into this vast inner space inside of the hull of the ship. It's in the center. And I realized that I was going to a really nice looking place, and I always compare that with such a majestic and beautiful area. It's just splendid. It's wonderful. It's full of life. Different. It's not some cold inner sphere, mm-hmm. right, inner surface of a sphere. No, it's full of life. And I enter into that. And after I went through that discussion about what happened in there, as far as my complaints, why don't they just come and do everything for us? But later, they began to sing a song, and after I had said, yes, I'll do what I can, and, you know, it was within my ability, you know, I don't have super abilities, but within that, I can do what try to do, you mm-hmm. know, willing to do what you want. And I don't know what you want, but I'll be willing. And I'm in the Hall of the Elders, and they seem to approve. They really approve of the fact that I said, okay, I'll do what I can. And I noticed that they had this happiness about them. They seemed pleased and happy. And then they began to sing. They sang a few bars of almost like a praise. And during that time when they were singing, what I believe happened was they were simply allowing me to be a part of them worshiping God. They wanted that experience. They wanted to give me that experience. They knew that I wanted to know God. So in the way that they worship God, which was with a song and with full heart, I experienced the blue light again, and this wonderful blue light that engulfed them and myself also. And what happened, I believe, is in the Bible, the Hebrew version of it, was that there was a visitation of the Shekinah, or Shekinah glory of God in the holies of holies. That was visible, a visible light, and the high priest would be within that holies of holies, and God would come there. Well, what had happened was a similar experience, except all of these elders were engulfed in this glorious light again, this blue light. I said, oh, this blue light again, and the next thing I know, I'm engulfed in their worship and praise. And this is my experience with them as they decided to show me how they reach God. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful experience. After that, I was taken to see some other creatures that are not on Earth. The first one was this big, gigantic octopus-like guy. And I say guy because he had personality. I stood in front of him, and they said that, my first expression was, oh, you got a gigantic octopus in here. And, you know, we like to eat them, you know, and where I come from. In Hawaii, we it's one of our delicacies to go after those octopus, we call them taco, and next thing you know, I hear a reply from him, which is saying, you look pretty good to eat myself. I'd like to eat you myself. And oh my goodness. And I kind of got a feeling like, oh, I didn't expect this, but then I also got an understanding that he was making a joke. And I realized that here is someone that it was such a personality there, as a octopus, and I realized it was he was at a high level of intelligence and much more than I could have imagined, and yet it was part of their crew or their function there. And then from there we moved over and we went into another place where I saw a very regal.
What size was that octopus compared to your size?
I was standing, I believe, maybe 20 feet away.
Mm-hmm.
And at that perspective, I was looking up.
Oh, I see.
And I remember his eye really. he was like, there was something behind his eye, like an intelligent brain.
Oh, yes.
You know? And look at a real octopus eye, and he's like, you can tell that, you know, he's just an animal.
Oh.
You know, but this guy, he's got this look at you, and he's got this personality, too.
Is that the only thing he said to you? You said he had a personality?
Yeah, he was like a person. Well, he had that personality that actually made a joke.
Oh, right.
You know?
Some joke.
And then I said, oh, if we have them swimming around here in the ocean, we wouldn't have anything. We'd eat everything, I guess.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I asked them, were they planning to plant him in our ocean? But they said, no, he's not going to go to the oceans of Earth.
Was he in a capsule of water, like an aquarium or something?
He was contained in his environment.
Did he look happy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He looked content.
See, at a certain level, see my cry out for God was also his, and his. Story is the journey. Once we as human beings are, what they were showing me in this was we as human beings are coming up to levels that other creatures that are so different from us have already attained, and that is the ability to progress beyond the temporary mortal level and move on to a level in which seems to be like eternal, not mortal or temporal, but eternal. Because this seems to be where they were pointing me, and it didn't necessarily have to be just human beings. These other creatures are on the same journey.
I see.
So he knew he was on that same journey.
I see. And how are we doing on that journey?
We're confused.
Yeah. Yes.
So on that journey that, you know, people, the most famous ones now are the suicide bombers, you know, and they think that you can do God a big favor.
Mm.
Yeah. So on that journey, one of the most noble characteristics that humanity has is, you know, there's no greater love that a man would lay his life down for his friend. This concept putting no greater love for God than a man would blow himself up for God.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this has been perverted, confused, you know. So the proper reaction is, we're far away from the real answer to that, which would have to be not go over there and, you know, blow them up, but almost the opposite, because the understanding is wrong. Now the creatures that, you know, we are trying to make that ascension to that don't have to worry about death or anything above the animal. But sometimes, a lot of times, they'll fall back to almost being like an animal in a confused state. And I guess seeing these, well, this great octopus and his personality and the fact that he was on the same journey and the quest moving towards God was interesting. Yeah. Then I moved toward the other one, which was, we see one, the octopus, I guess, was there, and he has no skeleton or any form of skeleton. And then I moved to one who was had an exoskeleton, like an insect, except very big. And it was regal, and he seemed to be sitting on a throne, like a special chair, and he had a real regal composure, like he tilted his head toward me and he bowed. And when I was introduced, I forgot what his name was, but he also displayed, you know, as if you're being introduced to any person, he has a personality, and I realized that they were showing me others, not just human beings here on Earth, you know, searching for the right thing. You know, these other creatures are moving toward the right thing. They're moving and making the progress from one level that maybe their level was even past where we are. Because we don't have a united Earth. We don't have people that are all like in that Hall of Elders, where the elders displayed this oneness and uniqueness toward God, this oneness of heart and mind, and basically of love, receiving the love of God. These creatures that I saw were also on the same level. So, being introduced to all of this, and as I move away, I'm perplexed. And this is where, in the last hour before this, I believe I was talking about seeing a human being who was surrounded by a very large humanoid group. It's a Neptunian. They make the best Mr. Universe bodybuilders look small. Even the professional wrestlers of today look, they seem to have that, though, that size, but they were bigger, and they were surrounding him. And this is where they introduced, he tried to give me more information, this one being, a human being, looked very human, talked English, came out. He said, you look a little confused. And I said, well, yeah, I'm very confused. And I still had my head spinning after seeing all these things. And
I can understand.
Yeah. And he said about the book, you know, the book is a book on Earth that you will help explain a lot of this for you. And I didn't realized that there was a book on Earth, but I jumped at it. I said, "Is that must be the Bible? Then the Bible, you know." And of course, it was another book. He realized the Bible was. He didn't say it was a bad book. It was, you know, it's a good book, and it's a book that does have some of this information. But the other book is called the Urantia Book. It's called the Book of Earth, or the Urantia Book. And he went on and explained that within that you'll find a lot of the answers. And it's interesting how the Urantia Book actually does talk about what they call spheres of life and architectural spheres of life. And the architectural spheres are really made to order worlds. And if anything describes would describe this mothership around Saturn, it would have to be like a made-to-order world, a world that literally is growing as it needs to grow and is one of the farthest away from the bigger ones and the more gigantic ones that would surpass the size of our solar system, of course. But this one is small, and it's posted out here for our Earth, our development on Earth, and they were literally, according to the Urantia book, they are part of a group of beings called the Life Carriers. And the Life Carriers are responsible for seeding life throughout the universe, and they're very, very ancient in terms of their age. Actually, millions of years is easy for them to be that old.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically, as a mortal being, as creatures that are created, coming up to a level where we can worship God, we can seek after God and try to be connected to the universal creator, is the actual level of creation that is wanted or desired by God, because that is the point in which a creature moves away from being an animal to the potential of becoming an eternal being.
So
that was like matches, you know. I'm looking at these other creatures who are probably very, very old, definitely on their way, and if not already immortal, on their way to immortality. They seem to be like very just regular. They can, you know, of course, manipulate their environment. And one of the things, of course, was their remarkable telepathic ability. But apart from that, they were with beings. I wasn't looking at some spirit or something.
Well, you said you were looking at a like an insect on that,
yeah, that was
chair
like,
or throne?
Like not an image, not a hologram, or not some some video feed or something they were giving me. In fact, I remember when I was taking off from Earth and they were showing me Earth, I kept telling them, you're just replaying some of our, you're trying to fool me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a real trip away from Earth. And of course, traveled in excess of the speed of light. It's very fast. But looking at this one creature, it was the same kind of, wasn't the same kind of thing. I wasn't looking through a panel. I was looking through air, right? That's it, right? There's nothing in between. And
was he making eye contact with you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, the eye contact with this one insect type or exoskeletal being,
mm-hmm.
Was of the design that was similar to like a praying mantis. Very similar, except much larger. And
was
having such a noble character about it.
Was he your size?
Bigger. Yeah.
So would you
I
say
also
he was
looking up at him.
Also looking up.
Yeah. He was nowhere near the size of the octopus guy. But it was big. I was looking up. I'm not sure he was on his special seat.
Did he fit in with the rest of the beings on that craft out near Saturn?
Walking around with them and stuff like that. I'm not sure, because I only met him in like it seemed like a throne room. I remember saying to my friend, my friendly Biavian guy that was always with me.
Yeah.
The first one, when I saw the octopus, I asked, this God? It can't be God. That's where they're on the, you know, same plane, mm-hmm. you know. And then I went over and saw the being that was insect-like and mm-hmm. very beautiful. This God? No, it's not. But they're on the same journey toward God. So here we are as planet Earth, and moving toward God. And there is a very important factor that what happened to me after I had come back from this experience was I had no memory of all of this what I'm describing right now, mm-hmm. but I was absorbed in one person's story that was given to me and was and spoke for quite a bit or on the phone, and it was simply a Bible story about Jesus Christ, about how he came to earth as the Son of God, and that how he had made a way for all anyone who would want to believe on him would be given that track toward eternal life. And I just couldn't get enough of it, and I began to move my desire to find even more. So ended up what happened to me was within a couple of days, a few days later, maybe about a week and a half later, I found myself with a minister, and I had accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior. And then next thing you know, I grow in knowledge and in truth about this. And I began to receive the baptism in the Holy Spirit, and began to notice that, and everyone began to notice right away that I was not just the ordinary Christian that was coming up. There were certain things about me that was very strong, and the certain gifts of the Spirit, word of knowledge, word of wisdom, prophetic, seeing into the future, all of this stuff was really strong with me. And next thing you know, I became an ordained minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, and I had a church following and everything. And then later on, more and more and more of the knowledge came through, until pretty much have quite a bit of it, almost all of it, of my short stay over there in on that mothership. But along with that, I was given the pointed toward the answer for my big question, which was God. Where's God? How do I meet God? And the answer is here on Earth. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that I have as my perspective. I don't know if Riley had that experience, but I sure did, and I had that purpose, and I had that that weight on my heart all the time when I was in the ship, seeing all of these different beings. And what is I know what is about to happen in the next level is that we're always taught the Lord's Prayer, and this is the concept of the Lord would be the God, you know, praying out to God and asking God on earth is here, or where we at, praying that the will of God be done on earth as it is in heaven. And the will of God, which I began to notice, is they had a real concept of duty, and they were going to do their job up there. Seemed like with a lot of love and care and service, and it, I believe it was to God. So they have that level of relationship to God that we need to generate here on Earth. And a little by little, we're making wonderful strides toward it, and sometimes developing a civilization based somewhat on that, and some, of course, not based on God at all. And I notice, we can notice within this short time, those that wanted to be atheistic governments that were gigantic, such as the communist bloc countries, have broken down and have begun to allow humanity to, that they will try to stifle from the third part of our nature. We have body, we have mind, but that spiritual part that seeks after God was tried to be quenched, and of course their civilization has broken down, and now all the world is should try to be free towards moving towards God, like whether it's like how I was, just, you know, the church is all over the place, but I just wanted a direct one, and next thing you know, I guess it's contact, and beyond that, I get removed of that memory of it and led down the normal pathway. And I believe it's directly by their influence, too.
Well, you said you were a minister for 3 years? And
yeah, I was a minister in one church for about 3.5 years, another church for 3.5 years, total of 7.
I see.
And their influence in my life has been precise 7-year cycles. And this is one of them.
Could you explain that more?
Well,
precise.
The 7 years is an interesting factor because the star symbol that was being worn by them on their uniform, as I explained before, was not just an ordinary patch. We're familiar with, you know, like a uniform has a patch, the military have patches, the police have patches on their shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so stitched up patch, but this was not a patch such as that. It was an emblem that was 7-pointed, but when I looked at it, it had a 6-point. Immediately I said, that's the Star of David, that's the 6-pointed Star of Jerusalem, or Israel. And they said counterpoints. Then I realized it ended up in 7, but this one point was alive. It moved through the count as I counted, and it always appeared at the end of the count, and ended up with 7 points, even though it had the appearance of 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
What it means, and what I've been shown by them is that 7th point is the 7th day of the Son of God in different worlds, as he descended from went out from his location in the central point of the universe, and went all the way out into the 7th stage. The 7th stage was Earth. And in the 7th stage, he became human. Became mortal. He could have become, the thing about it was, I realized now that he could have become mortal as that octopus or that insect or any one of the other humanoid types that I saw, but he chose to be on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And become mortal there, and then open the way for all of us to become adopted into the universal family of God. So these aliens, we're the alien right now to them, because we're not fully adopted into the family of God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So they, like the stories, there were wars in the heavens. Riley has accounted for Tam's point of view story of having some problems with some other creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And It is one of the reasons why Earth has its trouble, because it was one of the planets that these life carriers were interrupted in their work because of this battle. And Earth went through like a quarantine period. And because of that quarantine period, civilizations went its own way. The concepts of faith and God went through different religions, and until finally we end up trying to quench the concept of God entirely, and only trying to become basically a very smart animal. And that fails. That will fail ultimately. Even right now, there are things that we are discovering that say there's got to be much, much more to our being here. And even our personality and our way to pick, we could pick up things that just our mortal body and mortal state is almost picking up experiences that are at a level that's eternal. And that's why they're there, to make sure that we're tended to, I guess.
We're attended to?
Yeah. We are not a forgotten planet or sphere because of them.
When you said that humanity is reaching out to God, how do they see what we're doing with many different religions? We don't have just one religion here. It seems like we're fighting because of our religions.
That's the confusion of the story of religion. Humanity's ego tends to want to say that we got the only answer, and the other guys are wrong. But basically, the cry out in the soul of man for God is the one call that they want to hear. They want to hear that call out of the living creatures on planet Earth, and we are the one that makes that call. A chimpanzee or, you know, a dog, they cannot make that call. They're incapable of it.
Yes.
So, as far as being part of being an animal, we can be an animal just like them if we want to stop calling on God, or we can become almost selfish in terms of our religious attitudes, and say that you have the ultimate answer, and you know, you got this divine authority to go blow up people, but that's because of a perversion of some of the greatest characteristics about our who we are. Mm-hmm. And although biblically there is a lot of teaching out there about how God is going to, you know, ultimately clean up the whole mess. That's a work in progress, I guess you might say.
That God is going to clean up our mess?
No, like what some religions say. You know, basically, like, you better be good, because God's going to come over here and he's going to teach you a lesson.
Mm-hmm. I see.
You know, and it's not the case. It's taking some of the truth. Basically, all it boils down to, what that message is, there's that God is love. They show me this pure love, and that God is love, and that that is the essence of where we need to go, you know, and then we can be fully adopted into their society, the everlasting society where people, these people, they're not like mortal, where they live like 70 years and die, or, you know, they know about extremely long periods of time ago. And they're there when man was just getting civilized. They helped influence that, and there was some problems too. And as I said, there was a point in which the war had caused Earth to be quarantined, and now Earth is moving toward being adopted back in along the lines that it needs to. So we will see a lot more, you know, events, and I think more and more people will begin to accept that these beings who are got bodily form, humanoid form, maybe they're not our some people's religious ideas of how angels are supposed to look like, but are actually functioning somewhat in the role of different levels. Angelic hosts. I'm pretty sure, according to where I see them sit in the Urantia book, that these are the life carriers. So that's why Tan and Nella are very concerned with that kind of stuff.
How many times are there spacecraft coming to Earth? It seems like there's lots of sightings. People see them all over the place, all over the Earth.
Yes.
And they're under the ocean.
Yes. That's all true. And they're active very much right now because the activity on Earth is increasing a lot. Earth is maturing toward a point in which they will come to a point where you're ready as a planet to be adopted. Of course, you know, it's not like you're going to be 100% perfect utopian society. That's not the case, but more or less it's going to come to a point where more of the world will be God-fearing, God-understanding, God-seeking. And because of that, and they realize that they can move in. Not move into Earth, but move in closer to us, more like embrace us, and share the love of God, and say, we're also that way.
Do you feel they're showing themselves to us? It seems like there's just more and more alien traffic on this planet.
Of course, it's going to be... There was a time where they were not, you know, going to let us totally destroy ourselves. So they did some certain things on mission, and these were done by. Definitely got the feel that some of these beings up there were really skilled almost a military type of a feel to them. The Dorians had that feel like they were like military people, you know. But they may have come. Maybe they were the ones. I don't know who may have made sure that We didn't pull the big switch and shoot rockets at each other with nuclear bombs, you know. We have stopped total devastation. There's stories that are out there that say that things did happen like that. But suddenly, you know, things didn't work. And I believe that their responsibility is as a life carrier, is to also be like a farmer, nurture, make sure everything, you know, goes right. We're sort of farmed for a harvest of eternal beings, you might say. We're all temporal, mortal beings, but Earth is going to become a planet, is already a planet where a lot of eternal beings come out of it.
Michael, could you discuss a little bit about how you are becoming enlightened by these beings? Because you were there once so many years ago.
Okay, we've got, you know, about 5 more minutes. So,
we have about 8.5 minutes.
8.5 minutes, okay. Well, let me put it to you this way. Well, I had explained to you that within the Christian circles, within the circles of the Pentecostal group, which believes in many of the supernatural gifts of God, the Holy Spirit, they noticed that I was functioning at a very high level, had a lot of things, and I noticed that too. It didn't seem just ordinary. And this is one of the ways in which they are influencing the world. When I was with the elders, I definitely got the feel that at one point, before the room turned blue with this beautiful light, they had been like praying, you might say, for Earth. And this is a wonderful thing that I perceive. So, yeah. So is that the answer?
Well, I was looking for an answer since you haven't been out there, but years and years ago.
Oh, as they pray for Earth, they also are communicating back.
That's what I'm getting at.
Huh?
That's what I'm getting at.
Oh, yeah, they're like praying for Earth, or they're influencing the receptive beings on Earth with their influence. I'm one of them.
And you pick up their messages? Or
the messages are not like coming in and where I can just sort of read them off. Many times they're just like a complete knowledge, and then I can just sort of give the words to the understanding.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, but certain things like I was not even given a clue on, like. Like 9/11 was one of them, where when 9/11 happened, I had no clue. I mean, the first thing I knew about it was looking at it on the TV. However, quick flashback, about the year 1987, there was a skyline that was described to me by a friend of mine who had, in accordance with my teaching, described the skyline of New York from the Jersey side across the Hudson as missing the towers. And it was directly relating to me about when things are going to get really troublesome here on Earth, in the U.S. too. And that was, you know, back in 80-something, 87 around 87. And sometimes it does come to me, sometimes it goes, for the information comes to me, and I have to remember that it comes to whoever is receptive at the time sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of stuff does happen. And so people who wonder if, you know, you got a question, and I can ask them the question, and if I can relay it right back to you instantaneously. Sometimes, perhaps, everything has its limit. It can tell you. Sometimes it will not tell you.
You mean you can relay a question to these beings and get an answer back momentarily?
Sometimes. Yeah.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, because it's part of the what they ended up doing up there with me, I guess.
So you have this ongoing connection with them?
I guess so, but it's not just with them, you know, really pointing toward God, but I'm sure that because of my stay there, I think they did make sure that they got to know me well enough. And because of that, you know, so like I recognize your voice, I recognize you. Okay, you know.
I see. So you can communicate with them much more easily than anyone else could.
I'm not saying that I was given the title as navigator. See, when I talked to Riley a second time, the first time he was taken away because he was talking to question, and he briefly saw me, and he went, "Whoa, what are you doing here?" And he was getting very upset, so they moved him away. And next thing I know, I went through all of this, and later, toward the end, before I leave the mothership, come into this room, and I meet Riley, and Riley's introduced to me and as the ticketer. And I said, "You mean like a, you know, a conductor on a train?" And says, "No, but that's his title, ticketer." And then Riley looked at me and he said, I was introduced to Riley as the navigator. And Riley went and said, "Navigator? He doesn't even know where he's at." And I said, "Yeah, that's pretty true. You know, I don't really know how all this works and how I can, you know, navigate. My goodness, what is navigating, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
And obviously Riley is writing tickets, and I'm the navigator, and you make I guess it'll become apparent why that title was given. There was another one that was that girl, the lady, she's a little older than me, a Caucasian woman that caught the ride with us back, and she was introduced as a communicator. So there's one more that probably is really good at communication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But ultimately, for everybody who is interested in knowing more about this sphere out there, I called it, when I first saw the object, they pointed it out to me, I said, "Oh, you mean that light bulb? It had that spherical look, but not circular." So light bulb would mean like oval. And you got one photograph on your website that looks like a light bulb.
Yeah.
Yes.
So...
And we have 10 more seconds. We'll have Michael back on the 22nd of May. Anyone just write in their questions, and we'll ask him on the air. And we'll wrap it up, Michael, and have you back soon.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Aloha.
Aloha.